Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. Ford, Kia, Hyundai, best in new inventory, great pre-owned inventory with the Sunbury Motors Guarantee, and a fabulous service department to back it all up with great technicians at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, online at sunburymotors.com. Neil Coulong today, Donnie Collins today, terrific announcement at 4:35 today. And we go from all of that greatness to now. Let's drag the show into the abyss with the Matt Cotrillo rant of the day.
And we're also going to start today with another induction into the Hall of Stinkage. For one, David Pollack of College Game Day. I don't know if you saw this over the weekend, Steve. I guess you didn't. You were in South Carolina. But I didn't see this until today on social media. I did not watch the draft on Saturday because I was at a conference. But he apparently, David Pollack, got into a back and forth with Pete Thamel during the game day broadcast of the NFL draft on Saturday, talking about Penn State next year. I got the audio here to play it, and this is the absurdity of David Pollack towards the end of this clip when Pete Thamel is given the argument that Penn State is basically the team to beat in the Big Ten next year.
I think they're going to go over. I think Penn State has a very good chance to make the playoff this year. And I disagree with David. I think up front they have Olufoshano at left tackle. He will be a top five pick in the NFL draft next year. If he had come out this year, I think he would have been the first tackle taken. It was probably the biggest surprise amongst NFL evaluators that Olufoshano returned of all the players who came back in college football this year. So I think you have surrounding Drew Aller with the tailbacks Robert mentioned. You give him a chance to grow up a little bit. You give him protection. They have had a bad offensive line at Penn State for majority of the last 5 years.
So the majority of the last 5 years, but you just pointed out a guy that you're talking bragging about. Like, and they still stunk last year.
I think they've finally grown up, David. I think they've recruited well at that position. Phil Troutwine, the position coach, has got them in a position where there are multiple guys drafted, and they're ready to go in the trenches with Ohio State and the trenches with Michigan.
They still stunk last year. They won 11 games, and they won the Rose Bowl convincingly. I don't care if Utah didn't have their quarterback or not. Obviously, David Pollack was a little too hungover from New Year's Eve last year. Are you kidding me?
Their quarterback they did have was 8 of 21 passing in the game. He was not going to win the game for him.
But still, Penn State was the clear better team in that game. They still won hands down in that game. They still won 11 games last year. You saying they stunk? Guess what, David Pollack? I don't think you can handle that Penn State could actually beat teams like Ohio State and Michigan that you're so used to gushing over every single Saturday.
I think he meant the offensive line. I don't think he meant the team. Now, you can, I think if you listen to it, I think they were talking about the offensive line because the concentration was on Olu. And you're talking about a team that produced a 1,000-yard rusher and a second one that had over 850.
There's even that, too. The line got better as the year went on.
Yeah.
Did you see not the big runs? Did you forget about the 87-yard run by Nick Singleton to set the tone in the Rose Bowl? I mean, this guy's got to get with it, man. I thought he's always stunk on College Game Day. David Pollack, to be honest with you, just kind of seemed like an arrogant curmudgeon. Well, this just puts it over the top. This guy doesn't know what he's watching. I'm sorry. He doesn't.
So do we label you as not a fan? I'm just checking.
No, senor! No, senor! No, senor!
So today is yet another induction into the Hall of Stinkage for one David Pollack for his ridiculous and flat-out wrong take on Penn State as a team and the offensive line. And also to the rest of the crew that were on that set, ESPN, I think it was Sam Ponder and Robert Griffin III, thinking like, oh, it's such a crazy, outrageous take that Penn State's going to be good next year. Because apparently they didn't watch college football last year either. And Sam Ponder should know better because she used to be on SEC Network and been around college football. She should know the game.
Well, you know, we're all in this business on this part of it to deliver opinions. And people deliver opinions. Now, we can debate how well-informed the opinion may be, what kind of facts are behind the opinion. And that's why I don't get offended by opinions, because everybody's in the business of delivering them. And I don't usually think too much about it for that reason, because David Pollack is expected to deliver an opinion. It is fine to me, for example, that he and Pete Thamel have a differing opinion. Now, I will say this, the difference between Pete Thamel and David Pollack is Pete Thamel's actually been to a Penn State practice, which at least does give him, in fact, he's been to a couple of them, which at least gives
him, almighty!
Which at least gives him a better feel for the personnel and what he's seeing and so forth, instead of doing it from not 30,000 feet, but maybe 10,000 feet. I mean, it never hurts to have that firsthand, at least perspective, so you can sit there and take a look at it. It's what I do like about what BTN does. It may be a practice, but BTN goes to the practices of all 14 teams in the preseason. They do their shows there. And I think it gives them at least a foundation of perspective as to what they're talking about and what they're seeing. Same thing with basketball. Dave Refson in basketball will do play-by-play in one form or another of every team in the conference, so that when he gets to talk about these teams, especially when the teams get to the postseason, he's seen everybody in person once, which means he's been at shoot-arounds for everybody once, which means he's had sit-down conversations in the season on site with everybody at least once. And I think it does gives them a better idea of the foundational opinions that they have about teams. I think sitting in the studio the entire time, and I've mentioned this before, and you just do what you do. I got it. Right? And you know how much I think of Phil Steele. Well, Phil Steele's watching a lot of games on TV along the way. Phil can't get out the practices and so forth. So he has to do a lot of his research that way. And you know how highly I think of Phil Steele. I have great respect for him. But with the television guys, I've always been a major proponent, and I've talked about this with my students in class, of what I refer to as, it's just an expression, getting your hands dirty. I realize with 131 Division I football programs, you're not going to be able to see everybody in person, but you can get there and at least get on tour and in the preseason see what you think of the top 15 teams in the country, just to give it a feel as to what you're seeing. Now, but you have to have somebody that wants to pay for it as well. That's the other part. We're talking about issues when it comes to how much money is available to do some of this stuff. But I always feel like it gives you a better perspective, more foundational perspective, of at least being around it for a little bit. And I think that's important to me. And Kirk Herbstreit's perspective comes from the fact that he's at games. Kirk Herbstreit's perspective comes from the fact that he is, yet he'll get to practices. And I think it helps with what his analysis happens to be. Now, it doesn't mean your analysis is going to be locked on, spot on, anything like that. But I think it gives you a better chance of giving a more informed opinion, as opposed to just kind of going into a place. And, for example, I know game day's been here, but I don't ever recall. Man, I know Reese Davis has come out. But I don't recall Desmond Howard or David Pollock, you know, and back in the day, Lee Corso, ever coming out to a Penn State practice. Now, Chris Fowler, yes. But I don't recall ever seeing them there. And I just think it makes a big difference. It at least gives you some foundational, not locked in, but foundational perspective on what you're seeing, why you're seeing it, what the strengths are, what the weaknesses could be, because you saw it with your own eyes, and then you talked to some people there that gave you a perspective as to what you did and didn't see. And your job is to, obviously, in the end, deliver an opinion, which is what he does. And I have no problem with opinions. I'm just saying that when you do a job like that, my preference, and it's just a preference, would be the person that takes a little extra time and gets out and sees something instead of just watching the highlights of a game and then doing an analysis of what they see in terms of highlights. That's me.
Couldn't agree more.
I just think it makes a difference. And again, you're talking about 130 teams, so it is, you know, it's not easy to do that, but maybe you get it. I remember talking to the late Billy Packer once, and I said to him, I said, all these teams during the course of the year, I said, what do you do to get ready for the NCAA tournament when it gets cut down? He says, Steve, I try to lock in the top 15 to 20 to really get a good feel for them. He said, it's not going to be perfect. He says, but at least, I said, I'll do that to give myself a head start. And if I have to make adjustments, I'll make adjustments. I think that's advice that should be heeded by anybody that's in a position like that, does a show like that. That's just me. Just think it gives you a much better foundational. Doesn't mean it's the be-all, end-all, because it's not. It's not a be-all, end-all. But foundationally, it at least gives you some perspective to operate with. The entire point of what Pete Thamel was saying is he was talking about Olu Fashanu. And look, I was surprised he decided to come back. I was surprised. And he did. Well, the second that happened, that changed everything for Penn State up front. That's a left tackle that you can run behind. That is a left tackle that's going to protect either Drew or Bo, whomever it happens to be. And I think that Pete's right. That was one of the bigger off-season moves that didn't happen that has an impact on what's going on with the college game. And it's one of the reasons why most of us feel like Penn State has a chance of having a much better offensive line this year, because he'll be the cornerstone of it. And they did have a 1,000-yard rusher last season, and they did. And the second leading rusher had over 850. And they both averaged over 6 yards a carry. And you didn't have quarterbacks getting sacked a ton here last year.
Also true.
It's also an offensive line that last year that had to battle injuries, because Landon Tangwall missed a good portion of the season. Olu did miss the last third of the season. yet Penn State was able to go out and between Hunter Norzad and others and Drew Shelton and others, keep it together up front. And that, to me, made a big, you know, when you think about how that offensive line played last season, they played a good portion of the season without 40% of the starters.
Which, oh, by the way, and in addition to other guys coming on to the team next year, gives that unit more depth this year. And, oh, by the way, Juice Scruggs just went in the second round of the draft.
Yeah. By the way, I said both averaged over 6 yards a carry. I'll correct myself. Nick Singleton averaged nearly seven yards a carry. Katron was about 5.2.
There you go.
Which is terrific, but that's at least accurate. And they produced between the two of them 24 touchdowns last season. And look, that's, we all know what the key is going to be. You need to take care of business in your other 10 games. But look, let's be honest. We know darn well they're going to have to perform well against, not just perform well, they're going to have to play well and win against Ohio State and Michigan. Okay? Everybody knows that. It's not a, and by the way, Penn State quarterbacks in 13 games last season were sacked a total of 21 times. Well, no, I'm just giving a stat number so everybody knows, and that's not bad. You're talking about an average of 1.6 sacks per game given up by the offensive line, and when you're running, the number of plays that they run. Let's see. What would Penn State do? Total number of plays. Penn State ran last season 911 plays. So in the 911 plays that they ran, no, let's just do strictly passing plays. So Penn State last year, well, it would end up as a running play, so let's just take the 911. 911 plays total. Penn State had the quarterback sacked once every 43 plays. So we'll take the sacks and go with the attempts. So we'll go here. We'll do that. 422 plus 21 divided by 13. Okay. What is it? 422? Plus 21 divided. Come on. Do it. Come on. Ridiculous. Penn State quarterbacks were sacked. If you take 422 attempts, add 21, that's 443, once every 34 attempts.
Okay.
It's not bad.
Maybe we should have David Pollack take your class next year. Maybe he can learn something.
Look, he's done well in his career. I think he's very good and very polished on the air. That doesn't mean we're going to agree with everything he says. Part of his job is to deliver an opinion. And I don't mind an opinion, and I don't mind that it's 180 of what I think. That doesn't matter. Contrarian opinion. That's fine. It's his job to just like last year. Okay, I know we're going to run over the break here. When the season began in August, Penn State was not ranked. Right? And what did I say then?
Doesn't matter.
Right. Well, he's doing an opinion show. In reality, in terms of wins and losses, what you do, does it matter what his opinion is?
Yeah, fair.
It doesn't. It's part of the show. So it's part of the show. So that doesn't bother me. Now, if it had an effect on recruiting or anything like that, that would bother me if it had an effect on recruiting. But it's not going to. All right, Neil Coulong, next half hour, postmortem of the NFL draft. The schedule comes out next week. Matt is having a huge schedule party.
Oh, yeah.
He's been able to go out and cater it. And Brewers Outlet, a big part of it.
I send you an invite. I'm waiting to hear back.
I am at Penn State. I am at Lancaster on that Friday.
Oh, that's right.
There's something to be said about a sale with a handshake. A service technician who really knows what he's doing. They can explain it in English what the problem is. There's nothing better than having that friend you could trust in the area. That's Sunbury Motors, where you get selection, knowledgeable salespeople, and prices that fit your budget, and more important, that friend you can trust. Welcome to Sunbury Motors, Kia, Ford, and Hyundai. You could shop other dealers and compare prices, but at Sunbury Motors, you get their lowest price promise. They research the current used vehicle market and guarantee their used car prices are the lowest. If you find a lower price, Sunbury Motors will beat it. Three dealers all in one. See their full new and pre-owned inventory at sunburymotors.com. Pick out a vehicle you like and schedule your test drive online. Follow them on Facebook. Sunbury Motors Ford and Hyundai, North 4th Street, Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf online, sunburymotors.com. Ford Kia Hyundai, best in new inventory. Great pre-owned inventory with the Sunbury Motors guarantee. Fabulous service department that backs it all up with the best technicians. It is all at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf online at sunburymotors.com. Time now for everybody up there to put their feet up, unless you're driving, for Tuesdays with Neil. Welcome.
The most impactful Tuesdays with Neil we've seen yet, because I don't think we've had a Tuesday following a draft that was as high in enjoyment as this one was. And I understand full well the hyperbole that's behind such a statement, but I don't think anybody in the audience that's listened to me would accuse me of being overly optimistic about the Steelers by and large. But even I'll say that draft went better than anyone that I have seen, certainly in my professional lifetime, as somebody who was born after 1974, maybe the best that I've been alive for. And it's all on paper. You know, they're not out there in the field and blah, 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 all that. But, wow, that really could not have gone any better. It's a yeah. Great day. I think that we're seeing a shift in the recent fortune of the franchise now. I mean, there's a lot of things that need to still come together, but that's a big class. There's a lot of talent in what they brought in.
So let's start at the top, Neil, because I thought the order with which they did the top was intelligent by getting Broderick Jones first, then Joey Porter, because even if it wasn't Porter, they were still going to get a really good corner somewhere. What did you think just about the sequencing of it?
Yeah, as you've heard me say, and I don't want to disparage him, I really didn't think Joey Porter Jr. is worth the 17th overall pick. I'm not surprised he was available at 32. Might be a little bit lower, but really you're splitting hairs at that point. You can't say that a guy isn't worth 27, but he is worth 31. You know, there's kind of a range thing. You look at the middle of the draft. Call it the middle of the draft. I don't think Porter has been worth that to me, in my mind. Jones, on the other hand, definitely would not have gone lower than 14 or 15. Right. That was even maybe a little bit of a slide. With a surprise pick or two ahead of him. But you're looking at a tackle, I mean, just by all given measurements and standards, a guy that was born to play offensive tackle. I mean, he's got the look of the new uber-athletic edge defender, edge protector. He's high cut, which is not normal for an offensive lineman, but he's got excellent athletic balance. It's something he hasn't put together yet in pass protection, but he's a mauler in the run game. I mean, he's mean. Getting a guy like him with the enormous upside potential that he has at the price of a fourth-round pick that the Patriots are happy to oblige despite the Jets, who absolutely would have taken him at 15, it really speaks volumes to the awareness I think the Steelers had, not just positionally. If we're going back to Mike Tomlin laughably saying the team didn't have any glaring holes, well, they just traded up to 14 to address one of the non-holes that they have. The awareness of what they had going into this draft, who was available, what they would need to do to get a player of substance for them and not just sit back and do the cliche, which is what everyone prized Kevin Colbert for doing, but let the draft come to them. They got aggressive and they went and got a player with all the potential in the world to be a foundational member of this team for a lot of years. And he's got, I dare to say, more potential than any offensive tackle that this team has drafted in my lifetime, for sure. Yeah. It's the first one they've drafted in a long time. If they're going to wait, you have to kind of think that they're waiting for this type of a prospect. And I think Jones is absolutely that. An excellent decision all around, the right move at the right time. And you kind of had a sense they were going to try to get that pick back to some degree, whatever it is that they needed to do. They wanted to keep the stockpile of picks that they had as intact as possible in the effort to rebuild a kind of a thin roster, much more strengthened now. But at the time, they had a couple holes they needed to fill more long-term, and they were able to do that.
And then they get Porter at 32, which I think you feel is the appropriate spot for him to get picked. And I think he goes into a nice situation with Patrick Peterson around and the fact that they needed one anyway.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at it from the cornerback perspective, I felt was the whole thing. I'll be honest with you. When they went on the clock, when they traded up, I assumed it was for Gonzalez. Christian Gonzalez, athletic cornerback out of Oregon. I really like his game. If we're deciding between the two, I will say this. If it were me, I probably would have taken Gonzalez. For a variety of reasons.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not upset with it being Jones. That's a nice problem to have. If you're deciding between those two, I might go a different way, but I see why they did it, and it's still a good choice. Witherspoon and Gonzalez were clearly, in my opinion, the top two cornerbacks in this draft. I thought Porter might have got passed over. The kid from Mississippi State, Foley, I forget his name, but he's not. I think Porter's a better prospect.
He's okay. I think Porter's, but with all due respect, Porter's a better prospect than Deontay Banks. So
that's fair.
And I'm saying that firsthand, watching Banks. I did three of his games, and Porter. I mean, that's when the Giants had a terrific draft on paper. That was not the best pick there.
It's interesting. Wink Martindale spoke extensively about how much they liked Banks doing the things that he does, and that's kind of the cornerback position too. You know, it's hard when you get past the top 10, top 13 or so, it's hard to say this prospect is clearly better than this prospect in that same mid-level bucket without giving heavy credence to the style in which you're going to use that cornerback.
Right.
You use them all very differently.
I understand, I agree.
I think Porter is better all around.
But Jack Ham and I talked before the draft on Thursday. So it was Thursday afternoon. And Jack said, can you believe that guy is up in the first round area? And I said, no, I can't. And neither one of us could recall a single play we saw him make in 3 years. I'm serious.
I heard that from a couple people.
The two of us sat there, and we did three of his games. Plus, that includes, remember, us watching video going into the game just to get a feel for personnel. Neither one of us can remember a play he made.
Yeah, I'm not surprised by that. The film that I saw of him wasn't playmaking film either, as we would say.
Right.
You saw that with Porter, and I think that's the advantage that he has. I would imagine if you want to put him side by side, the lesser amount of people would be on Team Banks, but those people would probably say something to the effect of Banks has smoother hips, he can roll. And you probably run and cover larger swatches if that's the kind of defense you're going to play.
Sure.
And in what the Steelers run, what we've seen them run, let's just say that, because we have every indication
right.
to believe they're probably going to play more of a press coverage in the upcoming season, maybe beyond. From what we have seen them play, Porter fits better, in my opinion, and he
Agreed.
Gets his hand on the ball more often.
Agreed.
That's not even a question. So I love the idea that they would take the pure prospect to trade up to get him at 14. We'll never know what they would do at 17. Maybe it was Porter mm-hmm. 17. I'm sure they'll tell us it was, but we won't know. Jones would not have made it to 17. So there's value in that. For Porter to come available, to send up the idea that, well, we're exploring all trades, which is what you do if you're in that spot. I think they telegraphed it pretty well that they were royally excited when 31 went off the board, the last pick of the first round, knowing that they had control over Porter or somebody trading up a fortune for our buddy Will Levis at the top.
That's right. Too. That's right.
Which, by the way, I know a lot of people were calling me after that. Will Levis, top five, always kind of made me laugh. I didn't talk to anybody that really thought that was going to be the case. I don't know if anybody saw him fall into the second round, but I'm not surprised by that either.
Well, let me tell you this way: when Richardson was picked at four, and then and they took Skoronski at what, seven? That sound right?
11.
Skoronski at 11?
I took him at 11.
11. I knew he wasn't going to be a first-round pick. And the reason is, unless there was a trade, which one of those teams from 12 to 31 was going to pick a quarterback?
Nope.
I mean, you have to apply some common sense when you do this. You just can't keep rooting for a guy to go someplace. There's got to be a landing spot that where the team needs it. Well, from 12 to 31, nobody needed it, and I think that I mean, that's how I looked at it.
Yeah, and that's the quarterback market. It's kind of the underside of it that we don't talk about much. It's funny because both of these statements are true. The NFL does not. The NFL has a certain amount of high level, highly accomplished quarterbacks. And there is a very bleak mid to low range in terms of production and talent. At the same time, though, only four or five teams on the higher end are going to want to draft a quarterback into any draft. It speaks to the carryover of rookie kind of getting into the flow of things in his career, figuring out what to do. Maybe it's a third year guy. Maybe they just signed somebody and are not looking to draft somebody that high. But the opportunity wasn't there, barring a trade. And that's ultimately what it comes down to. You get him in the top five, or you have to give up more in total number of assets in order to get him, after the guy fell through the top five. And my thought was, I can't imagine there is a coach drafting anywhere that would want Will Levis over Anthony Richardson. I can't see that. If they're playing a game tomorrow, Levis might be the choice that you've had. 2 years from now, it's really hard to see that's not going to be the case. And everybody will throw, for their own various reasons, Malik Willis into that conversation. Anthony Richardson is twice the player Malik Willis was. I mean, it's not even close. He's not that far off. He's got, there are issues to his game, but you know what? There's the issues with all of them. I can pick apart C.J. Stroud. I can pick apart Bryce Young, although Young is, I think, a lot closer than the other ones are. Mm-hmm. But Richardson, if he puts all of that together, the guy's a nightmare. I mean, there's nothing that he physically can't do. He just needs to learn how to do everything a little bit better. You know, he's got that runway, and time is ultimately the issue. With Levis, what's he really going to improve on? I mean, he's got a nice arm, but it's not like overpowering to the point where you could dictate your entire offense based on arm strength. He's not going to run nothing but 15 to 18 yard outs in everything that he does. He's a college athlete. He's not an NFL open field runner, and nobody can convince me otherwise because they always try to say this. Whenever the prospect's highlights are him running the ball and he plays quarterback, you have to kind of wonder, the best plays he made are on the ground. And it's not really what I'm drafting him for. What can he do particularly well? And I don't know if that's there for him as a pro. To me, it's, you need a plus reason to want to take him in round one. Otherwise, to me, it's reasonable to say he's a second-round guy. That doesn't mean that he's a joke. It doesn't mean that he's not going to be able to do anything, but I don't know how great his ceiling is. When I look at Richardson, he's a first overall ceiling, and his bottom, I thought, always was four overall. I'm not surprised.
Yeah. Draft is more than just two rounds. It's seven. What did the Steelers do in other rounds that fit the team, but also fit what has the potential to be a terrific draft?
They did. We get past Porter. Their next two picks, it's comical to me in a way because one was so quintessential Steelers, and the other is so not Steelers. It really brackets themselves well. Everything about... You watch him play. You have great insight on this as well. He's a sit and throw guy. He's a gap penetrator. He's a Steelers defensive lineman, and it's almost sad in a way with John Mitchell retiring. He's not going to work with this kid because he's the type of guy Mitch absolutely loves. Physically, he's imposing, very quick off the snap. If anything, you look at it in terms of overall value of role in the NFL. That's why this kid is a second round draft pick. Other, as far as talent goes, he's going to make an impact because he's a really good football player. He just might not be a three down guy immediately. So he really kind of fits a certain definition of a round two pick. And even then, I think he fell a little bit more than you thought he would have. But he's a really good player, an excellent pick. The second the Steelers went on the clock and pretty much turned in the card right away, I knew it was going to be him. He's too perfect for him. I didn't think he'd make it this far. Yeah, great pick.
Really, big, strong, active. I mean, he's got terrific hands. A lot of things you love.
Active is a great way to put it. You know, and that's really what it's all about. It's funny because the kid they signed from the Chargers is a lot like that. He's not the athlete that Benton is, but. You're looking at a 1-2 probably inside defensive tackles to rotate around and build up with. They've suddenly got some pretty impressive depth on that defensive line. They're going to cut a good defensive lineman this year. It's a testament to sticking to what they do. They've emphasized the position. They've drafted it pretty reasonably high lately, and they added to it in free agency the last couple of years. They brought in Montrevious Adams after they had brought in Tyson Alualu. The Fiocco guy now, three draft picks the last 3 years, Loudermilk, DeMarvin Leal last year, and now Benton. They have depth. You know, they're going to be able to work those positions very well. But for me, I think that probably the biggest sense of confidence fans should get in the direction of this team is the fact that one reason or another, when a player like Washington falls to the third round, whether the injury or not, the versatility that that guy I understand that the general, you know, lack of pleasure people find in Matt Canada. Any NFL-level offensive coordinator, if they didn't stay up half that night drawing up stuff they're going to be able to do with that guy on the field.
Yep.
He is legitimately one of the most unique players I think they've ever brought in.
Yep.
I mean, you realize he's a pretty one diet away from being a decent-sized NFL tackle.
Yep.
Plus, athlete. Made like that. I mean, this is like a Julius Peppers type comparison, fairly.
Yeah, you're right.
You watch him move in space. It's incredible how quick he is, how nimble he is, for how big and how long-limbed he is. He catches the ball very well.
He would be a college basketball power forward.
To be honest with you, the first thing I said, how did this guy not play basketball?
He had to have been
a pretty good basketball player. It's just me. But 12 personnel, you put him and Pat Freiermuth out on the field together in an RPO like Canada has been trying to implement. It put Deontay Johnson, George Pickens, and Najee Harris on the field. I'm not saying that all these players are all pros. I'm saying, though, that they will all play those specific positions very well for that kind of an offense.
Yeah.
And the trigger man is Pickett. If Pickett can know what to do in each of these situations, they're going to be tough to stop. That's not going to be easy.
Yeah. And by the way, don't fall asleep on Nick Herbig, the fourth-round pick out of Wisconsin as an outside linebacker. Nick, I mean, Neil, we got to run, but again, I think Herbig was a really good fourth-round pick, so that's he'll make the team. Neil, as always... Thank you so much. It's always wonderful to put the shoes up on the desk and enjoy Tuesdays with Neil.
We're kicking back this week. Thanks for having me, guys.
Neil Coulong. Donnie Collins next half hour. Fun announcement at 4:35, and Matt has more complaints.
I do, actually.
I don't talk to them before the show about this stuff. They're just certain things about certain people you can assume. Here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.